We were touring the front. Must be the whole team talk was just me and him just screaming at each other, I think. We walked out second half. I remember going into tackle with Papa Bubba Diop. Remember him?
A wardrobe.
Oh, mate. He was a unit. When ball was bouncing about middle of the pitch. I've gone straight through him, middle of the pitch. All right, won the ball, and that was it. We ended up winning the game 2-1. He pulled me into his office at the end of the game and went, Percy, he said, I had to go for someone at halftime. All right. He said, you're the only one. I knew I'd get something back from you. So that was that. So we're sitting there having a beer. We'd won the game 2-1. But was I having a bad game? Probably not. But he said, I had to get a reaction from someone, and he was the one that I went for. You can't ever recreate. You can be the best penalty taker ever on a training pitch. All right. So I've never missed one. But you can't recreate the pressure of when there's a last minute, or you're winning 1-1, or it's 1-1 and you need it to win the game. It just adds that little dimension to it. Should you always score a penalty kick? Yeah, you should. But sometimes that little bit of pressure just puts you out a little bit. You know, just don't strike it as cleanly as you should do. And I've always said it's penalties are not always about technique. It's having that bit of bottle, I think, to take it. Paralytic. I got the physio there because he's going to have to stitch his eye up and everything like that.
Waking a bit over, sorry.
As we've got, we stayed in this place. It's like a dormitory. So middle bit, there's big glass things in the window. So first floor, second floor. I think all the players were on the first floor, all the staff were on the second floor. As we get in, Jeff out of the car, carrying him. All right. I've looked up and I just see Brucey just stood at the top of the thing like that, looking. I thought, oh, shit, it's not going to be good. So walked down. I think the physio was doing his eye and that sort of stuff. Went to bed. He went, see me in the morning, used to. And that was it. Went to bed. Didn't think anything of it. Next morning, we was out on a run, fucking trying to punish everybody for what we did, which was just apologising to the boys. We fined us 2 weeks' wages for it and killed us. But it was a good night out. So I remember him walking in, we got to the playoffs, I think it was, after winning at home. And I remember him going, as he walked in, he put the whiteboard up, flipped over. He was, don't start sucking each other's dicks yet, boys. In other words, you haven't made anything. We've got to the play. It might have been the first year we got to the playoffs. And I remember him putting it up on the whiteboard. And it just sticks in the back of my head now. Because you've done nothing. You've won nothing. You know, all you've got is got to the playoffs. Now you've got to go and do the hard work and go and win the playoffs.
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month. But most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
So yeah, we're not doing formal introductions, but morning. Thanks for coming. It's an absolute pleasure. I just normally do it in the afternoon. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
No, pleasure.
Awesome, man.
Good to be here.
So just some career stats before we start. Tell me if it's wrong. 24 years playing career.
Longer than that.
796 league and cup appearances, 51 goals. That looks seems heavy on goals.
Took penalties though, didn't I? Penalties have probably made 20-30 of them up.
So the two
we ain't got reds on there.
We got what?
We ain't got reds on there, have we? How many reds?
A lot.
More than 51.
I averaged one a season.
Did you?
I think I did. Yeah, I was on something like, I was definitely double figures.
Goals just on the thing. It's just like Darren Purse. It's just like smacking into people. One of them, you made somersault.
He spanned about four times.
He deserved that, though. He was a little... I was at Plymouth, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Because we was a real young side there at Plymouth. And I remember him doing it. And I thought it's never went in to hurt anyone, but he'd taken the piss out of one of the young boys in the corner. And I thought, I'm not having that with you. And yeah.
Yeah, the ball's at the other end.
Yeah,
rumour has it, it's still spinning now.
What a great tackle. But he's just trying to look after the youngsters and teach them that people shouldn't take the piss out of you, really.
Like it.
You said your career started at Orient. How did football begin for you from a young age?
I was a centre forward up until I was about 14. And then, I don't know how it all went. But I used to play up front with Jason Tindall. Me and Jason Tindall was centre forwards for a team called Simrad, which is a really good Sunday league side in London. So we played together there, and we'd score sort of 30, 40 goals each. We was like ruthless and relentless, and yeah. So we did all right. And then about 14, I think a coach, a lad called Bernie Dixon, who's passed away now, who's like chief scout at Orient, and he said to me, Dad, your boy will play for England if you're making the centre half, or he'll play for Barnsley as a centre forward. So at 14 years of age, took the decision to play at centre half, and it worked out to be a decent one because I would never have been good enough to be a centre forward. I was at that moment, I was like bigger, stronger, quicker than everybody else, and all my goals were balls over the top, get away from you, and you'd score, you know. So, so become a centre half, and yeah, the rest is history a little bit. So,
I beg to differ a little bit, yeah, because I've seen you. We've seen you up front down there.
I think I played 6 games or something. I loved it. I was just running around like headless chickens. You know what I mean? It was class. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it.
So you got picked up by Orient. What were your memories of beginning out there?
I was never like, you know, when kids are besotted and just desperate to play football. I was never desperate to play football. Just I enjoyed it. I was good at it. But at 16, I was going to start on a school. You know, I'd had offers to be like apprenticeships at Tottenham, Arsenal, quite a few of the. I was lucky enough I never signed a contract. All these kids nowadays, 12, 10, 4, signing 2-year deals at clubs, never signed a contract. Went and trained, played for a lot of sort of professional clubs. And then at 16, I was going to start on a school. Had the offers of YTs from a couple of clubs. Even like Mill Ward offered me one, but my dad said, no, concentrate on your education if that's what you want to do. But then Orient, rather than me signing a YT scholarship, they said as soon as he turns 17, we'll give him a professional contract. So that was it for 6 months from obviously like August to July, to February when I was 17. I was just going in training every day, playing for their reserves, playing for their under-18s. Playing like 2 games a week. It was brilliant. And they was giving me a little bit of cash in hand as expenses. So that was that. And as soon as I turned 17, signed a professional deal and 3 days later, maybe debut. So it was like, it would never happen nowadays because everything's all about contracts and stuff like that.
HMRC will be all over that now as well.
Well, it was expenses, it was bus tickets and all that, you know what I mean? In case they come chasing after me, you know, I had to put receipts in. But yeah, so I got a bit so I was getting a bit of receipts and stuff. That was it. Maybe debut at Brighton away 3 days after my 17th birthday. So for me, as a 17-year-old, it was class. Would I have been like gobbled up by the system as a 17-year-old at Arsenal? Possibly, you know, because I was never a standout player. I don't think, but. It worked out really well for me. It was the right way. My dad was, and always has been, class in his decisions that he's done. Watched pretty much every game that I played. So he had a big influence on my career and probably helped me make the best of what career I had, really.
How long then before the move to Oxford? You weren't there a long way.
18 months. So I played, obviously we got relegated my first season, which was brilliant. They did the first ever documentary, I think it was, Orient for a Fiver with John Sitton.
Yeah.
That was my first season as a professional footballer and learned so much. Just more about like the ruthlessness of the game. You know, I think it's 17, you go in, you're sort of everybody's wide-eyed and just all this is brilliant, you know. But just when your teammate's sitting next to you and he gets sacked at half time, it's like, yeah, no worries. And when he's offering the rest of the lads out of that, you had to work, you had to think. And Sitz was an exceptional football coach. Just he wasn't ready to go into the management side at that moment in time, and it probably killed his career a little bit. Because as a coach, he was class. But as a centre half to centre half, I learned so much off of him in that first 18 months there. Probably owe a lot of my learnings then, because I was still quite new to the position as well. So I owe him a lot for what he taught me over that 18 months. So yeah, it stood me in good stead for.
And like you say, like 17, and you're a bit kind of what. And I remember the language of him is like, it was very on the nose when it was that dressing room.
Just straight as it was, honest as he was, you know, he'd say it as it is. And yeah, he taught me a lot. And yeah, it probably cost him a career in the game because he was an exceptional coach. Really liked working for him.
And Oxford come knocking?
Yeah, so obviously I played for a year. Then Barry Hearn came in and bought Orient. So they had a big razzmatazz and all that. So I remember standing on the halfway line, a thing, new kit with a page 3 model in my hands like that as a young captain of Leighton Orient. But Patsy Olin came in as manager and he weren't having me at all as a player, as a young kid. He didn't want the youngsters. So I went out to Finland and played out there for a few months during the summer. As I come back, Oxford had put in a bid for me and went and signed for Dennis Smith, who was an exceptional manager. what he did with that Oxford side back then was brilliant. I think I remember coming here and playing as a right wing back against Grange. You know, I mean, that was an experience for me. You know what I mean? Grange's pass, yeah. But playing against Grange up here, and it was a.
They give you a friendly welcome.
Always, you know, that's part of the game back in the day. Do you know what I mean? I think I was never a right wing back. I was just running around, legs everywhere. You know what I mean? And just we'd leave a tackle on each other, and that was it. But as a right wing back, but learned a lot there at Oxford as well. So from 19 to 21 before I signed for Blues, it was a real good learning. I played alongside like Matty Elliott, who was a real good player. You know what I mean? Phil Gilchrist was the other one. And between it, I'd sort of played and sort of get dropped out of it. So we learned a lot over that 18 months under Dennis Smith, who was a class manager, mate. What he did with that Oxford side to keep them sort of fighting for the playoffs in the championship on their budget was immense, to be fair to him.
And random spot in Europe to go on loan. How did Finland come back?
Just an agent friend of mine. What had happened? I'd played that most of the season before. And I think what they wanted to do, they wanted just to keep me fit and training over the summer, so you could do it back then, but there was no transfer window, so I'd sort of signed on the May, went out of May and June, and just came back straight for pre-season in the July, so it sort of kept me playing and kept me, so I ended up going and playing like 10 games over there, which was a real good experience.
Mm-hmm. So then Oxford, you made your England under 21 debut?
I think I signed for Birmingham.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah.
Was it Blues that you went to under 21?
Yeah, so I signed for Birmingham on the February, February 14th, just before it, 21st birthday. And I could still qualify for the 21s till the end of that season. So I think I made my debut. At the end of that season, we went to the Toulon tournament, which was like 98, the tournament prior to the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
France 98. So went and played in that against Argentina, France and South Africa, I think, for the three teams of our group. So that was a good experience, you know what I mean?
Because that France team, was France 98. Was that Omri and...
That was Omri, it was Omri and all that. Obviously, Christophe as well, I think, was in it as well. So,
Was that like as an experience?
We was like prior to it, so it was a couple of weeks leading into it. But good experience, mate. I'll tell you, Mike Wiseman, what's his dad's name?
Jack.
Well, Jack. Swinging.
Jack Wiseman. Yeah.
Jack Wiseman. He came on the tour party with us, and obviously he was big flare trousers and all that. What a guy he was. And I literally just signed for Blues. I didn't know who he was, just this random bloke in a shirt and tie came up to me. Oh, it's great to have you at Blues and everything like that. I was like, And then obviously he was like, was he president or something for the club for years? What a guy. What a guy. Every time he's just swinging. That's what you say with big flare trousers. But yeah, he was on that tour party. That's probably the... You're saying like everything you should remember from, I think, but meeting Jack Wiseman was probably the biggest thing about me getting called up to the 21. I bumped into Mike a couple of weeks ago at a game. I was down for a game and he's a nice fella. People like that need to be involved in football clubs.
Characters.
Characters. Gentlemen. They've got the football club at heart. So you get owners come in and stuff like that. You need to keep people like that in football clubs. And the lower down the levels you go, like, sort of league to non-league, you need them people within it, because they've got the club at heart and they want the best for the football club, so they're good people.
Same with Jeremy Dale, he's exactly the same. He's Blues through and through.
Yeah.
Businessman obviously, but wants the best. He's not just a faceless person that's just in it to...
He's got the soul of a football club in there, so yeah. People like me.
Yeah.
So you were quite highly rated around that time, weren't you, when Blues signed? What was the story around signing for Blues at that time?
I don't know. I think there was always... I remember in the documentary, I went for a fiver, I think there was... I think I'd played in a FA Youth Cup as a centre-forward. At that time, I was playing centre-half for like the first team at Orion. And then in the FA Youth Cup, I remember going to Villa and beating Villa 2-1 and scoring both goals. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We'll clip that up.
So that's it. So scoring... So I played at Hartlepool away, I think it was, on the Tuesday night, and then played Villa away on the Wednesday night. So it never happened nowadays, you know what I mean? But played 90 minutes for the first team on a Tuesday night, and then played in the Wednesday night in the FA Youth Cup as a centre forward. So that was an
experience. You were coming or going, did you?
You know what I mean?
Back to goal, front to goal, which goal.
You could do it there back in the day, just get on with it. Nowadays, sports science, the football prevention officers, I call them, sports science, they stop you playing. So it never happened now, but... Yeah, it was a stood me all right.
Yeah. So what was the call from Blues?
Oh, yeah. So obviously I'd played Orient, and then I'd had, like I said, Chelsea had offered 50 grand, Orient turned that down. And I think there was talk about bloody Blackburn when they were the champions coming in for me and stuff like that. So there's a lot of talk about me. And then obviously Blues came in with a bid. The club had accepted it. Dennis Smith had literally, he'd left Oxford at the same time and gone. And he rung me up, wanted me to sign for West Brom. But Birmingham just seemed like the right call. And if you'd have said that after I'd made my debut, Bury at home, and we lost 3-1, playing it right back, wish I'd got the West Brom. But the rest is history. It worked out to be a decent move.
What was it like coming to play for Trev? What were your impressions of Trev at that time?
Brilliant manager. You know what I mean? From that point of view, really personal. Like, I remember going to meet him with my dad, having dinner with him and Helen. And I think that was probably his best part, was his man management, knowing a player. Was he the best tactically? Probably not. Was he the best on the coaching pitch? No, because he used to join in training pretty much every day. He had people to do that. But yeah, he knew what a football club was all about. He understood that. And probably, I think the biggest travesty is he weren't the manager that got us promoted. You know, missed out on the playoffs all them times. Then Brucey comes in and gets us promoted. So that was probably hard for him to take, because he always wanted the club to do well. But yeah.
Do you think he was too invested in that way because of his history with the club?
Possibly. Probably too nice as well. You know, probably you've got to be ruthless as a manager. And I think maybe he was a little bit too nice. You know, probably didn't sort of get rid of one or two too early that probably stayed in the club too long. I don't know. But that's probably the one thing you would say about him. He's just too nice with what he did. But he always wanted people to do well, and he always wanted the club to do well. So from that point of view, I think his heart was in the right place.
Yeah. Mm. But when we had Skip on it, Skip said that if you was to say something to him assertively, Gaffer, and you're passionate about it,
he could sway him, you know what I mean? And he didn't sort of manage egos very well. The best thing I'd say, Trevor put together a top side. When you look at the side that he put together, it was some real good. But the players managed it for him. You know, Skip was class. You know what I mean? Martin O'Connor, the way he, for me as captain, obviously captain Blues, but I learned a lot from him in them early years. You know what I mean? What it's like to be a captain, how to look after a group of players and not let people take the piss, not let people sort of get too high and above their station, but keep everybody on a level pegging and make sure everybody respects what the players are all about and the group are all about, rather than standout individuals. So he was class at that, to be fair.
Well, I think it's testament to the team at the time that he mentioned, and with the characters in there like yourself and Skipper, Trevor'd give it 5 minutes before going in at half time. If you're getting dicked 2-0 at half time and people are shit, you will kind of dig people out, say, get a good. And then he'd come in once it's all kind of simmered down. Right. I imagine that
if you ever come to blows, they have like Royal Rumble in there.
There was a lot of characters, weren't there?
No, nobody ever came to blows. There's never sort of, but you'd get into people's faces and it was never personal. And this is one thing I would say about football, and I've learned, is it's never personal. All you ever want to do is, A, do well for yourself, but do well for the team. And if somebody's, if you're calling somebody something personally, it's not on. But if you're saying that's not good enough, that's not acceptable, and people make mistakes, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And we'd never dig somebody out for making a mistake, because that happens. But if you weren't doing it and you weren't running and you weren't getting back and you weren't pulled out of a tackle, little things like that, then you get called out on it. And I think that was the biggest thing. But it's also a little thing, like respecting the group. Don't be late. You know what I mean? Back in the day, nobody was ever really late for stuff. You know, you was always in meetings on time, always ready to travel on time, always respected the group. And I think that was the biggest thing I could say about that Blues group then. We respected everything that was about the team that were in there. Mm-hmm. And nobody really stepped out of line too much. But you can have heated conversations, you know, and I think it's right sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Some of that stuck with me from when we were on Tony Coton, that he said he wasn't particularly bothered about impressing the fans or impressing family or impress. He wanted to impress his teammates. He wanted to be there. Like, it's like a kind of, it's a war, and it was a war at the time.
We used to, I talk about it all the time at the minute. I had to be in the mentality of I was going to war a little bit. It's quite far-fetched to think of it like that. But I always trained the way I played. I'd kick someone in training. I'm never meant to hurt anyone, but kick someone in training, you shake his hand, walk up and get on with it. I had to be on it all the time. Otherwise, I was a bang average player. You know what I mean? I had to be on it all the time. And that's what it was like. I remember Megson, Gary Megson, when I went to West Brom, we were 1-0 down at Fulham at home. And I remember him, we walked in and he basically just ripped into me. Right? I just think, and I was like, I stood up, give a bit back to him and everything like that. So we were two in the front. Must be the whole team talk was just me and him just screaming at each other, I think. We walked out second half. I remember going into tackle with Papa Bubba Diop. Remember him?
The wardrobe.
Oh, mate, he was a unit. When ball was bouncing about middle of the pitch, I've gone straight through him, middle of the pitch. All right, won the ball, and that was it. We ended up winning the game 2-1. He pulled me into his office at the end of the game and went, Percy, he said, I had to go for someone at halftime. All right, he said, you're the only one. I knew I'd get something back from you. So that was that. So we're sitting there having a beer. We'd won the game 2-1, but was I having a bad game? Probably not. But he said I had to get a reaction from someone, and he was the one that I went for because I knew I'd get something back. And
it's the perfect, yeah. Well, your teammates seeing that, then thinking, yeah. Jesus Christ, I don't want that. We've got to up it. But also, we have got that, and then you've gone and like a tackle sometimes.
Yeah, a little bit. And that was it, just a tackle. He said, just ignited us, and we've gone on to win the game. So little things like that, I look back on from a man management point of view, the players, and go, I always reacted better to tough love rather than my arm around my shoulder. You know what I mean? I hate like praise and stuff like that. So I'm just, Roy Keane talks about it all the time, and I get it. You're just doing your job. I mean, what, heading that ball and putting your head on the ball to stop it going in the back, and that's your job. You know what I mean? So whenever I'm listening to him talking, it's class, because it's just how it should be. That's your job. Running round after the ball is your job. Either do it or don't. If you don't do it, you're not going to have a career in the game, because it'll chew you up and eat you up and spit you out as quick as you know it.
So even like, I'm not skipping forward a little bit here, but We had the Preston clip out, didn't we? It's got loads of Preston fans on it. Best night of their life.
Oh, we've rattled some Preston cages yesterday.
Really? But
they're like, it's the greatest night of their life, yeah.
But it's a lot of it's focused on the penalty shootout and the way that went. So like you're talking now, where no nonsense. What was that like on the pitch?
You look like you were fuming in that clip.
A little bit. Do you know what? I knew I was going to take the first penalty as well. I took the second one. Marcelo took the first one.
Yeah.
But I knew I was... And all you wanted to do was just stay focused. Do you know what I mean? You know what he's going to do. That we should do. And it was just... It was a lot of faff over nothing. Apparently, they'd agreed it was going to be at the open end, and then they switched it to put the other end for police safety. I don't know.
Fire safety, if the bloke was there.
Yeah. I believe if we'd have just gone, bang, do it, that we'd have won the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it was a lot of faff over nothing, and then we went and sat in the bloody changing room for 5 minutes before. It was just, yeah. And it
got to the point where I think he thought, well, I've made my decision now, I've got to stick with it.
Yeah.
But you can't stick with it, can you?
And no.
Then they just keep running back to the bench, and he's still moaning at the copper and moaning at people. And
I think what the best thing about it, and if you learn from it, if I was to learn from it, if stuff like that goes against you, that's when you go, bang, they hate us, boys. They're against us.
Galvanize.
Let's go and fucking win this game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go and fucking take your penalty. Be ruthless with it. Go and win the game. Stick two fingers up at the end of the season. We walk off. Go and win the playoff final.
Yeah.
You know, so from that point of view, I think you can learn from it. It was a lot of faff over enough. Is that the reason I missed my penalty? No. It's just hit the post. It is what it is. You know what I mean? 2 inches inside, it's a goal, everybody's great. It's more fine margins. But it was a lot of faff for nothing.
And Benno, that one at the end, Benno got his hands for it. So you like,
listen, the wonderful, it's Stan Lazarus, the cross. Who did he cross it to? Last minute of bloody normal time.
Was that Marcelo?
Yeah, was it Marcelo?
He missed it. He missed great a couple ball of from, yeah, chances,
great ball from him. And it's just,
yeah.
So there's always going to be a reason why you did or you didn't get there. And disappointing time.
So on the selection of playoff games. So second season in, we're in the playoffs, aren't we? That was how heartbreaking was that? Watford.
Penalties again.
Yeah.
So that's the first time. That's the first time we go into playoffs, end up in penalties. Like, talk us through that.
I think that was the year that Trevor started talking about psychologists here and everything like that. Penalties are always a lottery. Did we deserve to win the game against Watford over two legs? Probably. I mean, I thought we played well over both legs, and we just missed out on penalties. Mm. It's hard. The year afterwards, Sheffield United got beat 4-0 at home. Apologies. Where did that result come from?
Wow, yeah.
So I was watching that back, and it just seemed like everything that we were doing just didn't work out. Like, we had the offside just didn't seem to be working. There seemed to be getting round the back, and then everyone just looked so pedestrian and slow. It was like, I don't know. Was it like this is going to be a turn up and
a
little bit of
possibly just a bit, yeah,
arrogance.
Yeah, arrogance. Just a bit too much confidence. I think we're going to win the game. But that was a hard one to take.
That was
4-0 because the second game is a non-event then, you know what I mean? The game's done. So
yeah, at the time, it was like England and Blues. It was like, what, it's like penalties and stuff. It's just like, fuck's sake. Did that drive you?
Well, what do you say after that? What do you mean? What was said at full time after that?
Not a lot, really, mate.
No,
it was just shell shock. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's hard. I'm trying to remember back to when we. So I think it was when we had the porter cabins. I mean, that stand was being built, and they had the porter cabins on the back there. But yeah, it was like, I don't remember too much about it. I remember the first leg of. I'm trying to think what game it was. Millwall, I think it might have been at home. I remember Frank Barlow. I'm trying to think. It couldn't have been that because Frank would have been there then. Remember him walking in, we got to the playoffs, I think it was, after winning at home. And I remember him going, as he walked in, he put the whiteboard up, flipped over. He was, don't start sucking each other's dicks yet, boys. In other words, you haven't made anything. We've got to the play. It might have been the first year we got to the playoffs. And I remember him putting it up on the whiteboard. And it just sticks in the back of my head now. Because like, you've done nothing. You've won nothing. You know, all you've got is got to the playoffs. Now you've got to go and do the hard work and go and win the playoffs. So from that point of view, it was quite things you remember.
It's good TED talk.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Quite good analogy. I quite like it. I haven't used it yet, but one day I will.
You've got to be careful.
You're not allowed to use it this day.
You'll be all over that.
So, yeah.
All right, so those weren't the lies.
Experiences. Yeah.
There's no losses, there's only lessons, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk the Worthington Cup final.
Mm.
So, just talk us through.
Well, that season, yeah? Because that was a good season, particularly
Player of the Year,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Player of the Year that season.
It's probably my breakthrough season at the club, really. I say breakthrough season. I think I played quite a lot up until then. But I was probably 24.
I'd done of age.
Yeah, a little bit. I'd done me learning. I knew what I was. I'd grasped what I was as a player a little bit. I think early doors, I thought I was better than what I was. I'd give away a mistake by bloody trying to diag pass and all that sort of stuff.
I was going to say this to you. So when you first came, those became famous, the attempted long balls.
Yeah.
They'd just go, whew. But then you mastered it, and then that become a part of your armoury then, didn't it?
That's, I think the early doors, I was still learning my game as a 21-year-old. I was, centre-halves don't come to age till they're 23, 24. You make mistakes. I used to make loads of mistakes. You know what I mean? I used to get hammered by the fans because of it. So I'm glad they remember probably the last 4 years that I was here rather than the first 3 years. You know what I mean? Because I used to cost goals all the time.
Are you aware of that when it's happening?
Not really, because I think when you say coming of age, I mean, 21, I was still worried about Darren Purse and my career and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's only when you become like captain full time and stuff like that, you start being aware of the whole bigger picture of the football club and what the football club is, and you start worrying about everybody else rather than yourself. So that was a big coming of age moment for me, sort of around 23, 24, because you look at everything else, and it made me a better player by doing it. I think it showed what I was really good at, about sort of leadership qualities, being that leader around the dressing room, on the pitch, being harsh, driving the team through as best you can. That was what I was probably most famous for. I look back at some of the photos that of me throughout my career. 9 out of 10 of them are me fucking screaming at someone and pointing at someone. But that was me. I sort of tried to get the best out of the players that I was playing with.
And that season, it was like you'd kind of just, you were like colossus.
Yeah, but I could feel that as well. Mm. You know what I mean? That was probably that 2-3 years there was probably the best part. And then it all went tits up when I got the ankle injury and Matty Upson come in, and that's football, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to the cup final, what do you remember? So leader.
Class.
So we got in there late because the traffic in
was it that bad, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember it snowing the night before. I remember being sitting in the hotel and everything, like, it was like chucking it down with snow. There's like where we stayed. We stayed in a hotel right far out. Apparently it's David Sullivan's mate or something like that. So we had the whole hotel to ourselves. It was nice. And I remember it snowing and it's like coming over the thing that they're going to close the roof and everything like because of the snow. And so I think it made it a better atmosphere the way it was. But it's still, when you talk about obviously we deserve to win that game. How we didn't win the game, I'll never know. Because the boys were immense the whole game.
At it. Honest. Just at it, yeah.
Were you surprised at how you weren't? Because obviously the run-up to the final, we'd knocked teams out, Premier League teams. But did you find that wasn't above your level? Was it a surprise that you were able to match them up man-to-man and perform so well?
I don't think it surprised. It didn't surprise us anyway. I think we were always going there with a thing that we were going to win the game. Or we're going to give it a good go anyway. And I like you said, like beating Newcastle at home here and stuff. I think it was a real good run. Did we start beating Tottenham away as well? Was that there?
Mm-hmm. Destroyed them.
Mate, we did. First start. I remember Trevor Francis walking in at White Hart Lane, 3-0 up, and he went, can just somebody just pinch me? Because Dealey was unreal.
That goal bullied him, didn't he? Just absolutely bullied him off the park.
And Birchie played as well, didn't he? Mm-hmm. On loan for
the first loan players, you know, never fall in love with him.
And he was he was class that day as well. He, like with Dealey and him playing off, we were superb. And I just think we always thought we had a chance because if you look at that group, we backed the group to go and get something. And I think over the 120 minutes, we deserved to win the game. Just disappointed with the penalties. It's not good, are they?
It just seemed to haunt everything that they know. So we got in there finally.
About 20 down, minutes in, wasn't it?
Just about, sat down and then foul off.
Roof of the net straight away. Just as we sat down, like.
Absolutely disgusting finish.
Yeah.
So you're kind of up against it. And then does the belief stay right up until the last moments?
I think if you look at the last 20 minutes, we're pushing. I haven't watched it back for years, you know what I mean? But we're pushing and. I think John McCarthy, he'd put in two or three really good balls and we'd sort of never quite drop for us. And obviously the penalty happened, which was mad. And
What are you thinking in the 90-odd minute? Are you just, what's going through your head?
I talk about it quite a few. It's surreal, mate, honestly. I look back on it now and I can still remember it. I remember that both of them going down, Grange and Martin O'Connor, right, and the ball was there. I just picked the ball up and I walked up to the halfway line. I'd love to have like a bird's eye view of it to see it. But 80,000 people, everybody all going off. And I was like on my own. It was weird, real surreal moment. I just walked around. I had the ball under me thing like that. No one came up to me. Like usually you get like a Liverpool player, you're going to miss this and all that sort of stuff. Nobody came up to me. Just for about 2.5 minutes, just on my own. And I knew what I was going to do with it. If a keeper saves it, he saves it. Do you know what I mean? But I think if you go in, I've always said with penalties, if you go in with clarity, where are you going to put the ball? Whatever happens from there happens, you strike the ball. And lucky enough, it was it went in the back of the net, which it was mad. And then I went, as I ran off to celebrate, I was going to take my shirt off. And I was like, shit, I've been booked. Can't do that. So if I did this fucking weird. I looked at it after. What the hell are you doing, you donut? You're like a prick. You have been... But you're doing it, celebrating the biggest moment of your career. You'd celebrate like that, you donut. But,
remember this now. Yeah,
what's that all about, weirdo?
Yeah, weird Johnson pond all over your head.
We loved it, yeah. From a personal point, we was like,
But no, it was class. It was brilliant. And then after the...
Did you have that adage in your head, let's not suck each other's dicks just yet?
I think just looking... you're looking at something I've always done throughout... Every game away, I'd always find me dad. My dad, he went pretty much every game I played. Always find me dad. And I think after I scored, you see me point up to him because I didn't see him up. Because I should imagine he would have been like ecstatic with it all. Do you know what I mean? So it was a proud moment.
If we have to, let's talk about that. The challenge on
one of your photos pointing and shouting at someone is one of them, Ellery. He's David Ellery. Oh,
bad tackle, wasn't it?
It's still too soon, 25 years later.
Yeah.
So we're going so the whistle blows then, we're going into extra time. Yeah. Obviously, you've got your heads up. I'm assuming they're quite deflated at that point.
Like I said, but even bearing in mind, we played the whole of extra time with 10 men as well. Skip was done. I mean, he was just the body just stood around. Did every now and then he'd get the ball and pass it to someone, but that was it. He weren't. So to finish the game with 10 men like we did, and shit, like AJ shit, it's an unreal penalty, isn't it? You know what I mean? How is
such a stick on?
Do you get two penalties in a game though?
Against Liverpool, when you're Little Blues.
You know what I mean? But it was a penalty and should have been given, but it wasn't. So, but then I'm going to go, Ellery should have sent me off, Villa at home here.
Right.
On the tackle with one Pablo Angel. They show it every year now whenever there's like a Villa. But honestly, it was a terrible tackle. I took him out knee high and he books me and I walk away and I thought, fuck, I've got one there. So, yeah, he looked after me a little bit on that one.
Yeah, that's the real look at that one.
Just literally down there on the halfway line, Villa Blues. One Pablo Angel. Honestly, find it.
I got to say, your Reds are always decent Reds, haven't they? It's never any grey.
They're like pushing and touching faces. All right. It's always a, yeah, all right. Half the time, you're like, you're walking before.
You didn't leave a reasonable day, did you? It was always,
yeah.
It's,
yeah. As fans, we don't mind it.
I look back on some of my tackles and think that's a bad one.
Prison time.
But I've never gone in intentionally to hurt someone. Do you know what I mean? It's just missed time, bad time. I did one on Andy Cole for Cardiff that gave him 12 stitches down his shin. You know what I mean? It's a bad tackle. But I didn't go in intentionally to hurt him, you know. But I think it's something that plagued me a little. I always wanted to go for a season without missing a game. And I never did it because I was always suspended for one or two.
Yeah, the injuries were fine.
Did it a few times without getting injured, but never. Always had a suspension. So,
diverting back to Cardiff then. So when it goes to penalties, then are you thinking I'm going to put it in the same spot?
Pretty much, it's always that catch 22, and the keeper knows what way you like or where you want to go. I always favoured that side. It felt comfortable for me to do that, to take that penalty that side. So. I mean, when in them sort of, say, pressure moments and that, I think you probably go back to what your tried and tested one. That was probably my tried and tested one.
And have a proper blast on it.
Yeah, a little bit. It's always got pace on it. Even if a keeper gets to it, you got half chance of it going in. You know, these little dinky ones where they roll it in the sides and that.
I call them the safeguards, you know, when it's nice height that way and that way for the keeper.
That's it. Anything sort of low with a bit of pace, anything high with a bit of pace, you got half chance. Anything sort of 2 foot off the ground, the keeper's got a real good chance of save if he goes the right way.
Being from coaching, playing, why do people put it then?
And the casual walk ups and stuff now, it's like it's fashionable, isn't it?
Yeah, but one that you can't ever recreate. You can be the best penalty taker ever on a training pitch. Right? So I've never missed one. But you can't recreate the pressure of when there's a last minute, or like you're winning 1-1, or it's 1-1 and you need it to win the game. It just adds that little dimension to it. Should you always score a penalty kick? Yeah, you should. But sometimes that little bit of pressure just puts you out a little bit. You know, just don't strike it as cleanly as you should do. And I've always said it's penalties are not always about technique. It's having that bit of bottle, I think, to take it.
Plus 90 minutes on the pitch of grueling, running around.
You're tired. You're a bit concentration levels. There's a lot to go on with it.
Yeah.
So getting over the devastation of losing that game when we shouldn't. I mean, to be fair, we lost, but you came out with a lot of credit, didn't you? The stock was high for pretty much everyone, Blues in general, because that Liverpool team won everything that year as well.
They were class, weren't they? Do you know what? That was probably the difference. If you look at our build-up into that game, losing playoffs and stuff like that, especially on penalties, and you look at their build-up with regards to winning stuff, winning European tournaments, they probably had that little bit of a winner's mentality, knew what it was like to get over the line with stuff. That might have been the difference, you know. And I think we probably learned that at the end of that, by the time we'd done that. Then obviously winning the Wimbledon Cup in 2012, it's not me, but I think sometimes you gain that winner's mentality. There's still players within that group that then go in and do that. So I think there's something to be said of it.
Mm. Was there, so obviously chronologically then, yeah, so we lose to Preston then. In the playoffs, Trev then started next season. We didn't start great, did we?
No.
And that's when obviously the change came with Steve. Was there a kind of an inevitability to that? Did you kind of feel like you were at the end of the road with Trev at that point with the squad? Did it feel naturally like?
Did he lose the dressing room?
I don't think he ever lost the job. I hate that analogy. You know what I mean? But I think sometimes you can't have the same voice for too long. You know, sometimes it does need freshening up. I think we were. I think it was only 2 points off, but we were in 13th, I think, when Brucey came in. But we were only 2 points off the playoffs. It was really tight, wasn't it? So maybe we just needed that change at that moment in time. And obviously Brucey coming in, and did he get promoted with Sheffield United before? And I'm trying to think, but sometimes that just that winning sort of drive at times, and it clicked for him. You know, he had some real good players in there, and it just his voice coming in, little change. Did he change much tactically? Not really. You know, still the same players, but just for some reason it worked for him, and it didn't work for Trevor.
Was he on the grass with you? Was he?
Not really. I mean, Taff, Mark Bowen was a really good coach. He worked under him. Brucey wasn't really one. He'd do a bit of tactical stuff, but he wasn't really one that would be on the coach every day with you. We might go out and do the warm-up and stuff like that, and he'll pop his head out and come out and do it then. But he wasn't sort of on the coaching pitch every day with us. I couldn't put anything like a moment that made it turn, but for some reason it worked out really well.
What was the first conversations with you then, captain, and memories of kind of
captain? The Watford game, Paul Lord, said the commentator saying Tyler two captains, the captain that had the armband taken off him because he wouldn't sign a new contract.
Yeah.
And because you'd scored then against Watford, and then Tommy Mooney was standing captain.
I was 24, 25 at the time. My stock was really high. I'm not gonna lie. I was doing all right. You know, there was talk about Arsenal and bloody £5 million. I don't know what was going on. Nobody said anything to me. I always said to my agent at the time, I don't want to know anything unless we're going. You know, so he never really told me whether or not he was having conversations or not. I don't know. But I just wanted to play football and concentrate on my football. If I'm being honest, the offer that Blues were offering was pants off.
Right.
You know what I mean? It wasn't that much more than what I was earning from the start. So from that point of view, it was right for me not to sign the contract. And it wasn't right for me. And I've said it throughout my career. I say it to all the under-21 boys now. If you sign a contract, don't ever complain if you're not happy with it. If you're not happy with the contract, don't sign the contract. You know, and that's life. You know, that talk about sliding doors moments and stuff like that. Yeah, you've got to be happy once you sign on that bit of, on that white line, because that you're signing your life away a little bit. You're committing to it. You can't then sign that contract and 2 months later throw your dummy out of the pram because they brought somebody else in who's on more money than you or who's taking your place. You sign the contract, you deal with it. And I wasn't happy with the contract. It's simple. Did I love playing for Blues? 100%. Loved it. I had a great 4 years leading up to that. And I always remember, obviously I didn't play in the playoff final, I was suspended again. I remember Taff, Mark Bowen, when we got promoted, everybody was celebrating, I was in my suit, and he just came over to me, hugged me, and just said, you got to sign now, ain't ya? And the part of it was about money, but part of it was, I just wanted to play at the highest level I could. Part of it now for me as a coach manager is, I want to manage at the highest level that I can. So if the opportunity comes to manage at a high level, you take it, I think.
But is there at least an amendment then? So there was a promotion bonus or increase in that?
It was a promotion.
It's not the same contract as Ross Gates on.
Championship, Premier League had just come in. It was called the Premiership back then, wasn't it? But that was it. There was more money. And plus, I was playing at the highest level. My agent weren't happy when I said to him I was going to sign. He wanted me to go and run it out and be a free at the end of the next season.
And so that's all you had left?
I had a year left on my contract. So, but for me, I wanted to stay. I didn't want to go anywhere, but I just wanted what I felt I was worth. But also, I wanted the opportunity to play at the highest level. And when we got promoted to the Premier League, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me to sign it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fair plugs. I bet your agent was fuming because you got a signing on fee waiting.
Yeah, that's a free agent. I don't know who he'd spoken to or anything, but at the end of the day, like I said, whether or not he liked it or not, I wanted to stay. I didn't want to go anywhere. And the opportunity to play in the Premier League for Blues was too good to turn down.
Well, again, the highlights.
And there was more money.
Well, and the money. Yeah. Playing the playoffs and that cup final, though, and being an English central defender at that time, again, you're in the match of the day.
Yeah, we always thought that you were going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you were performing really well, weren't you? And, for all those standout things. Yeah. If we didn't go up, we wouldn't
feel like... Up, I probably would have signed, like, probably not, because I don't think that the money would have been there. And like, and the opportunity to go and play in the Premier League would have been brilliant. But I'm glad we did get promoted, because then it meant I had another 3 years at the club, which I love playing for. So...
And you'll always have that first goal in the Prem, and yeah, that's always going to be...
Good strike as well, wasn't it?
It's a good strike.
I won an only goal in the Prem. But it's a decent little strike, isn't it?
Yeah. First ever. See, Devs was saying he's scored the first goal at St Andrews, didn't he? That's his clan's
fight. Yeah.
No one can ever take it. But yeah, you're in the history books.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Worth signing then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely worth signing. What was your memories of the promotion, just briefly? Madness. Did you get on it? Did you enjoy it?
Of course, I've always got on it. We like to go out together. I think it helped with the cohesiveness of the group, you know. So we like to go and socialise together. We like to drink, and I'm saying it like we was out every weekend. We wasn't, but we liked to, we would go out and socialise together, which I think helped with everything we did.
And you've engaged with fans then as well.
But you always have fans, isn't it?
Yeah.
There weren't people taking photos of you while you're having a drink. So we'd be on Broad Street, Hagley Road, and there would go, you know, just to. I don't know where. Trying to think what was on the Hagley. I remember that the Ipswich game.
You had Liberties and you had the strip club. That's the.
I don't remember the strip.
Nah, you wouldn't
remember. I don't actually remember it. Though. So those were the places we'd end up.
Yeah. So obviously, yeah, you say your ankle injury kind of threw a spanner into the works.
Yeah, no, I've always been, I was always really lucky with injuries, never really had any sort of, and then I had this real, I was playing for it for months. I had a niggly ankle injury, it was getting sore. I had a couple of scans and x-rays on it, and we had an international break, where it's like, I think we had 15 days or 16 days between me. So we played on the Friday night, we might have done, or Saturday. I had the operation on a Saturday evening, and the next game was 2 weeks Monday, and I was going to be, it was push, touch and go, but I was going to be fit for it. So to have an operation and then go and be fit 16 days later, it was like, man, it's only like a little clean up, little wash out. And after about a week, the stitches hadn't healed properly, and I'd started doing a bit of running on it, and I don't know if it felt too soon. It actually felt right. I remember on a Saturday night, I looked at my ankle just went bang. I had yellow pus pissing out of where the scar was, where it hadn't healed properly. And I was in hospital on a Sunday morning, having bloody antibiotics pumped into me and everything like that. So I was out for like 4 months. And it was in the January window, and Brucey went and signed Matty Upson, because he knew I was going to be out for a bit. And the rest, as they say, is history. I think once that had happened, I think his preferred pairing were Kenny and Matty. Didn't really play much the last probably 18 months that I was here, and I had to move on.
Was there a conversation to be had then?
Not a conversation to be had. It got to the point where I had a year left on my contract. I wasn't playing much. And I think it was best for both of us. You know what I mean? I didn't want to spend another year not playing as much as what I'd done. And I think throughout my career, I've always wanted to play. Even when after I'd left West Brom, I had 2 years left on my contract at West Brom. But I walked away from it because I wanted to play when I signed for Cardiff. And even then, did it cost me financially? Yeah. But I just wanted to play football. I didn't want to be someone that played 400 games, had a half-decent career. And I wanted to go and play as many games as I could. And I think that probably shows in how many games I played, that I just wanted to play football.
Short career.
There's
a lot more sending offs to squeeze in before.
Without the sending offs, I'd have played nearly 900.
So what was it like making the move to West Brom then? Did you have any, I don't remember any abrasion. I don't remember there being any real, but because obviously we've had Roger Johnson, and very different circumstances when he went to Wolves.
Yeah. I think I'd served me time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd been here 8 years. I think I'd served me time. And I think looking at, probably if you look at me last year, I probably played 15, 20 games maybe. And I was in and out. Obviously, Brucey didn't fancy me. There was other players that were better than me. I mean, there's no falling out. We didn't dislike each other. You know, it might have been the year that Jeff Kenner signed, and we got fined 2 weeks' wages when we was out in the piss one pre-season up in Scotland. But no, we never fell out. We just got.
You've got to elaborate.
So
you can't just drop that in.
We went to Anstruther, right, which is like the end of the earth, and I think Man United had gone there. It was Brucey's first pre-season. And it was a Wednesday night, I think it was, and he went, like, you can go out and have a drink, boys, if you want, but I want everybody back in by 11 o'clock. So we'd gone out like 5 in the afternoon. Me and Jeff Kenner, and Jeff had just signed from, but me and Jeff Kenner were in the taxi on the way back from St. Andrews to Anstruther. We're going to be back in time and everything. And he said to me, I can't do his Irish accent, but he said, Percy, he said, I don't know you from Adam, all right, but you fancy going back out? I went, yeah. So we said to the taxi driver, where's best to go? But you can go to Dundee across the bridge. I'll just go back into St. Andrews. So he spun back around the taxi driver, went back into St. Andrews. So we're sitting there, with just the two of us. Nobody else is there. Just about 2 o'clock in the morning, we've like walked out of the place. Jeff pissed as a fire. I'm drunk as well. He fell over and cut his head open. All right. So I'm sitting, I remember sitting on the curb in St. Andrews, 2 o'clock in the morning, all the students about to go, sitting there holding his eye together like that. Right. Jumped in a taxi. I think the taxi's cost me about 50 quid or something because he's got blood pissing out of his head. So I've run with Grange. Grange, you need to come out and help me to get Jeff out of the car and that, you know what I mean? So got a few of the lads. I think Gilly come down and a few of the boys come down. So he's paralytic. Got a physio there because he's going to have to stitch his eye up and everything like that.
Waking a brother,
so as we've got, as we stayed in this place, it's like a dormitory. So middle bit, there's big glass things in the window. So first floor, second floor. I think all the players were on the first floor, all the staff were on the second floor. As we're getting Jeff out of the car, carrying him, all right, I've looked up and I just see Brucey just stood at the top of the thing like that, looking. I thought, oh, shit, it's not going to be good. So walked down, I think the physio was doing his eye and that sort of stuff. Went to bed. He went, see me in the morning, used to. And that was it. Went to bed, didn't think anything of it. Next morning, we was out on a run, fucking trying to punish everybody for what we did, which was, he used to apologise to the boys. But he fined us 2 weeks' wages for it and killed us. But it was a good night out.
So the beautiful friendship between you and Jeff.
It did a little bit, yeah. We got on really well, didn't we?
Start of the night, I don't really know you.
I think we'd have got away with it if he hadn't fell over and cut his head open, and we might have snipped.
Is that why you're not drinking tonight? Because you're with him tonight, aren't you?
I've got things to do tonight. You know what I mean? I don't want to get caught out again. I can't lose 2 weeks' wages nowadays.
2 weeks in the dugout.
That's it. But yeah, good times.
That's class. So favourite game that stands out for the Blues?
Ipswich at home here.
Yeah.
Ipswich at home. I think a lot of people say, but yeah, the atmosphere was unbelievable. Well, games, it went there. It was like, it was unreal. And to finish the way that it did, it was class. What a night. Just the atmosphere was just bouncing everywhere. I'm surprised to stay. That's probably why the foundations were done a few years ago. So the leftover bits from that game is honestly, it was unreal,
wasn't it? Absolutely.
We all say the noise in here. You can still relive it now.
But just the build up to the game and everything, like with the frost and the blow, like the pitch would look terrible because of the blowers. The blowers had burnt all the grass on the side of the pitch and everything. It was
absolute save. It gives you that little bobble at the end there.
Yeah, I think we'd won it.
Yeah, the icing on the cake, and
it just topped it off, didn't it?
And that was the tactic from Trev, wasn't it?
Cut the pitch out.
So just mess it up and just let them.
Yeah. AJ scored. But do you know what? We were actually a decent side passing wise and all that. So I don't know why we'd want to mess the pitch up. But it worked out in the end. But that night was phenomenal.
So we're doing now. We try and recruit. We have the fireworks and everything. Like the Newcastle FA Cup game last year. That was a great atmosphere. But yeah, nothing's come close to that. Mm. Nothing's come close to Ipswich.
No, I think that, do you know what? I look back on where we are, where the club is now, and where it was then. It had like a real family feel to it, you know. Like, and I'd say losing the Rover plant and all that is massive to where the club was and where it is, because we lost so much then. Like a little bit of the heart of the club had gone. Because there were so many fans from that plant, and I know one sort of decision can't sort of change the dynamic of a football club, but I think it did a little bit, sort of ripped the heart out of it a little. And yeah, it was to come back to Blues playing then to where it was probably 5-10 years ago before the takeover and stuff. It was like, it felt a little bit, so it lost its heart a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
No, I agree. Yeah. So, tell us about some of the characters that you've played with down here. So you spoke about Skip.
You've
Horse had, probably goes without saying.
You've had most of them on here, mate. Yeah. Horse was class. You know what I mean? The stories that he's got and the stories you've got on Hulse are mad. He's such a character.
Just seemed like a great team spirit. And like you say, there could be some of that. And there's been talk of there was a fit, but like you say, it's nothing personal. But I think it needed that, and I think it reflects the fans.
Look at some times today, and there's probably none of that in the changing room. And it shows as well.
You can't buy it. Honestly, you can't buy it. I look back at that, and that would probably be, and I had it a little bit at Cardiff, but that is what you need within a group of players. That sort of, you talk about philosophies, but a culture of a football club is defined by that. And you can't, like when you got people like Mike Granger's, what bloke? You know what I mean? It deserves every accolade he's got at his football club. To see him score a goal against Man United with a broken bloody fib is mad. Do you know what I mean? Loved him to bits. I roomed with him for years. Used to play snooker with him most afternoons down at the trying to think where it was, but just by the training ground. And these little things I should never get away with nowadays. So when we was in the chat, like me and Grange would speak to Neil McDiarmid, who was a physio. So it'd be like we're playing Saturday, and we'd come in on Monday and say, we're fit. They might have a dead leg or something. We're fit for but we probably ain't going to train for a couple of days. So we'd get in the morning, get a bit of treatment. We'd go up and have a game of snooker for 2-3 hours. Up the snooker, we'll come back, get a bit more treatment, go home. We'd do that for 3 days, train Friday, play Saturday. He'd never have that nowadays. Because somebody would have it on social media and stuff like that. But to be fair to the point, I'm trying to think, what's the name of where the training ground is?
Stills.
No, the little... West Heath?
Yeah.
King's
Norton, yeah.
Yeah, West Heath calls Snooker Club, it was called. But they had a match table, and when we was going up there, the back would go out there and he'd iron the table for us. We'd have a set of match balls and everything. We'd leave our snooker cues up there, but we'd do it all the time. Like I was saying, we could never do with it nowadays because people would want to take a photo with you.
That was Southampton analysts filming you these days.
You'd never have it. Yeah, these two won't be fit. They're playing snooker on a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Exactly.
Yeah. But we'd always be fit. And he was class times. Yeah.
Did you, you moved to Cardiff. Did you think you were going to be walking out of Wembley?
I didn't really walk out of Wembley. There's a little stat for you. I was on the bench every game, never played a minute in the FA Cup final.
No, but you weren't captain, weren't you?
I was captain, yeah, but it's like the last year. I was 32, getting towards the end of it. And just never... Never played a minute. So nice. Yeah,
how'd you captain when you're not being up to captain?
I think club captain.
Yeah, club captain is that. It's that token gesture, and I don't want to take the captaincy off him. But like little things I look back on my time at Cardiff, and Rog came in as a youngster. We had a lad called Glenn Louvens. I was 32. I think Dave Jones, I thought I was done. You know what I mean? Which is fine. You know what I mean? This football's all about opinions. And them two were better than me at that moment in time. So I'm crying about it. You look back at the two careers the boys have had, I'd like to think that they learnt a lot off of me the year or two that they played. But I'd be the one that was playing and they'd be alongside me. I'd like to think that similar to when I was a youngster playing alongside Brucey, had it taught me so much over the 6 months. I'm hoping I taught them a little bit. And
it's a lovely thing that, say, you step aside, you lose your place to Rodgy, gets to learn from you, and then he comes out.
It's blues,
and
Lodge, it's a lovely blues there, is Ireland.
He's a good player, Rodgy. I mean, he scored goals. He was me at 23 years of age, quite centred on him. You know what I mean? When he was playing at Cardiff, he played for himself, which is fine. You know what I mean? He had his career. And I bet you, if you look at him as a 20, probably 7-8-year-old, when he came here and won the trophy, he was probably more of a more rounded individual and wanted the team to do well. Yeah. So that was probably where he was at.
You can write that. Uncannily.
I see a lot of Rog. If you look at Rog's career, it's probably very similar to mine. Started out at Wickham, got his move, had to force his way in, then nicked a couple of moves. So it's very similar to career to mine. And you know what I mean? He's done well with it. He's a good fella and a good player. And yeah, it's nice to see people got like that go on and do well.
Yeah, especially here.
We like that.
I'd seen one of your interviews regarding your time at Sheffield Wednesday. A little bit chaotic.
But when you talk about, and I was going to mention it earlier, when you talk about group of players, right, and one of my big regrets now is I went into that group of players after all that I'd learned, right, and kept my mouth shut. which I look back and think, well, right. You know what I mean? It wasn't me either. It
wasn't your style.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't me. I should have gone in, basically, and just ripped things up a little bit.
Managed.
You know what I mean? Yeah, dug a few people out. The professionalism at the football club was terrible at the time. You know what I mean? There was cliques around the group that weren't great. It wasn't a good dressing room at all. Hence why we got relegated. It just wasn't a good place to be around. And were there good players there? Yeah, like Franny Jeffers, Mickey Gray, Marcus Tugai, Leon Clark. Good players, but the dynamic of the dressing room was wrong. It felt so wrong from going in there. And we deserved to get relegated.
Was it a conscious decision then not to sign anything? Or you just thought, I don't know.
Mate, you captain there?
Yeah, I was captain. Like I said, I look back on it and I should have dug a few people out, and I didn't. I can't remember. I was so far away from what I... Do you know what? It might have been a lack of confidence a little bit. I'd finished at Cardiff. I hadn't really played much that last year. Recently took me time at Blues. You know what I mean? I hadn't really played much. And I should have gone in there and sort of been the captain that they wanted me to be. And I wasn't. I sort of, kept my mouth shut, probably jumped into a few things that I shouldn't have done. And, it wasn't a good time. Poor dressing room, mate. Poor. And I look back on Sheffield Wednesday, biggest club I've played for. Bigger than Blues, bigger than Cardiff, bigger than West Brom. It's a club that, if somebody gets hold of it, it could be a powerhouse. And it's huge, mate.
It needs to go hold off, doesn't it?
It does.
Otherwise, it could be one of those.
If you had somebody in charge of that, mate, it could be. It's a fantastic football club with a history it's got, but the potential it's got. You know what I mean? It's got potential to easily be a Premier League side. It's some real good football. Good people working there as well, you know. Real good football club. But it won. That's probably one of my, I say, regrets of my time. Is one of my regrets was not doing that at Sheffield Wednesday.
Well, then you followed on from, obviously, you had some loan spells. You end up at Plymouth. I'd seen one of your interviews as well, saying keeping them up was...
one of my best achievements in the game. It's class. Honestly, mate, I remember I was at Millwall playing for my boyhood club, which was brilliant. In hindsight, should I just stayed there and cracked on with it? Yeah. But then Kenny Jackett started bloody bringing me. I was 36. I was 35, 36. I was coming to the end of my career. I should have just stayed there, finished my career. Every chance I would nick to like under 21's job or something like that, Millwall for your boyhood club would have been amazing. But I still wanted to play. I still had that drive to play. And Skivo rung me from Yeovil and he said to me, like, wanted to take me on loan. And I pushed it for a little bit. Kenny was like, no, I don't need to go. I need to stay. We need to just run with it. But he started bringing us in on a Saturday morning. So I trained Monday to Friday. I was living in Northampton, travelling to Millwall. It was like 2 hours every day. So I was like, but yeah, it's a Saturday morning, Ken, the gaffer that's doing me. Do you know what I mean? I'd have trained all the time, just had the weekend off, and then you'd be fit. And if you need me, I'm fit, I'm ready to go. But so that was that. I'd come in on a Saturday morning, just fucking run, just doing like, because you was like one of the players who was out of the squad. So got the move to Yeovil. As soon as it got announced, Yeovil, Peter Ridsdale rung me. He said, why are you signing for Yeovil? I said, what's it matter? I just want to go and play football. He said, why don't you come down to Plymouth? I looked at them and they were 9 points adrift at the bottom of League Two. And I said to him, why would I come and sign for Plymouth? It's like 4 hours away from where I live. You ought to come and sign for Plymouth. He said, Percy, look, they'd just come out of administration, right? And Peter was my chairman. And he looked after me so much.
I was going to say,
financially, a little bit.
You're chairman,
all right? He put the contract on the table and I went, you just come out of administration. He said, Percy, you've got to trust me. He said, if I give you that, I know we will stay up. It's worth me doing because I know we'll stay up. Right? And for some reason, I signed. Like I said, but the best thing about it, obviously, Cole Fletcher was the manager. Right? No experience at all. And when you talk about dressing rooms, we had Conor Hourihane as a young 18, 19-year-old lad, good player. Curtis Nelson, Luke Young, who Wrexham and stuff like that. Central. So he had a real good nucleus of young players. He signed me as centre-half. So I'm Paul Watton as a central midfielder, and so I'm Warren Feeney, Nick Chadwick as two forwards. So experienced players through the spine, with the rest of them were just young players, mate. So we got a real group dynamic, got a little song going with everybody, and We stayed up with 2 days to go, two games to go, mate. It's unbelievable achievement to do it. And I look back on that and it was like, it was class, mate.
It
was
a masterstroke by Ridsdale, isn't it?
It was to do it. But he knew, he probably believed in me a little bit. He'd seen what I'd done at Cardiff with the captaincy and getting a group.
Where did you know Ridsdale from?
He was the chairman of Cardiff.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course he was.
So he was the chairman of Cardiff.
Yeah. And we've all heard the stories about his contracts as well. I know some of it's been debunked, but did everyone go in for new contracts, like thinking the best?
I don't know, man. He was always good as gold with me. You know, I mean, I'd never have a bad word to say about it. I think wherever he's gone, he's always, even you look at what his job he's doing at Preston, I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's class. He understands the game. Knows it. Some of the stories are the stories. I look at my story there with the contract. Should he be putting that contract in front of me at that moment in time? Probably not. You know what I mean? But he knew that, and I'm not saying it was all me, because if there's, but he had a belief that that contract would keep, and it worked.
Did you feel at that point as well the standard? Are you like, yeah, I can do
this. I always remember Moro ringing me, Darren Moore. It was when it announced. He said, "Percy, shit, I know what you're like. You're right." He said, "What you've got to remember is some players want to do it, but they can't do it." I went, "What do you mean?" He went, "You got to trust me on this." And I understand what he said. Like, there's players at their level that are not good enough. You know what I mean? So they want to do something, but their ability doesn't allow them to do it. And he said, "You just got to make sure that you don't lose your shit with it." Right? When you talk about like standards a little bit, when I dropped to non-league football, you understand it a lot. You know what I mean? But you try and bring that professionalism into the non-league game as much as you can. And I think the better you can get that, the better side you'll have lower down the divisions. But yeah, listen, I still think, I look back on that, it cost me my marriage, I'm not going to lie, but for me, it was fucking brilliant. My missus is unreal. You know what I mean? I've had an upgrade halfway through my life. It's class. So from that point of view, but as a football decision to go and sign for Plymouth, I honestly, it's unreal.
I think it's brilliant. They phoned you, signing for Yeovil, just to say, what on earth are you doing signing for Yeovil?
No, they did. I'd signed for Yeovil for a month. You know what I mean? So
it's a bonkers decision, isn't it?
So, and then I
just passed by his desk, that bit of information. What?
Yeah. So it's mad. Weird. It's football. We can talk about sliding doors moments a little bit. It's one of them things. You know what I mean? Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
So it's class.
So what was the transition into coaching and management? Was that a natural thing that you always wanted to follow through with? Or
Everybody said that. I never had no intention. I did like my coaching badges. I did my B license, A license while I was still playing. So from that point of view, did I have an idea that I wanted to do it? Yeah, but I did it more as a backup. Everybody said to me, "You're going to be a really good manager," but I've never thought about doing it. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's kind of right.
Comes naturally then.
We could see it as a fan, obviously. Yeah, as a player.
Everybody says that, but I think you've got to know what your skill set is. I'm not a coach. I'm not going to be on the training pitch. Do you know what? I'm probably Steve Bruce, if you know what I mean. But if I have a managerial career that he's done,
not bad,
but a little bit. But like, I think recruitment, like what I'm doing at the moment is like pathway. So I deal with like a lot of the loans, go out and watch a lot of the lads on loan. So like late nights on a Tuesday, Saturday, we'll train in the morning. I'll be nipping off to a game. So I do a lot of that. So from that point of view, it's really good. I do coach. I am on the pitch most days. But you've got a really good, my coach at the minute at Blocks, he's classmate. He's an exceptional young coach. And yeah, so why, it's not my skill set. So why would you stop somebody else's skill set? And I think part of leadership is know what people are good at.
Delegate.
If you're good at it, you crack on and do with that, and do what you're good at. So I think from that side of you, like, I think that the planning of like, if we've got an under 16 that we think's got half a chance, planning his pathway over the next year, where do we see him in a year's time? Where do we see him in 2 years' time? And just planning that pathway and putting the round pegs in round holes to make sure that we get in there and get them through. And I think over the last 4.5 years, it's at Cardiff, it could not have gone any better for me. You know, it's been class. It helps when you've got a manager that wants to play young players, but at the minute, it's gone really well.
No. It's nice that there's a club that is giving youth a chance and is creating those pathways, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not always the case, as we know down here.
Yeah. Brilliant. So just a bit of a quick fire then, just to kind of finish it off. Best player you've ever played with?
Christophe de Gary.
Serious.
Didn't get on with him at all. I remember Everton at home. We beat Everton at home 3-1 here. And me and him, just about 2 minutes to go, we're winning the game 3-1. You know, he didn't track a runner. So we're just screaming at each other. And he was giving me shit about winning the World Cup and all that. So, but I've got a thing about Christoph. And everybody loves him at Blues. The first 6 months he was here, he was exceptional. He was unbelievable. Once he'd signed his 2-year deal, when he came back, he wasn't the player he was.
We all tended to shy out that second season, didn't we? Because it didn't go the way anyone wanted it to go.
So from my point of view, and I think that was the second season.
Yeah.
And I think he'd lost the eye of the tiger a little bit. He'd lost the drive. Like, he came in, he had something to prove that first year. And honestly, mate, he was phenomenal. And he will always be the best player. Played with Aaron Ramsey. He will always be the best player. Did I get on with him? No, but he's never going to get on with everybody else. We're different people. But I remember calling him out and we had fisticuffs in the tunnel, all kicked off. But I just don't. And it comes back to calling people out. If I'd have done that at Sheffield Wednesday, I think we might have had a better group. But because I didn't, at Blues, we could get away with it because we had people into it at Sheffield Wednesday. I don't know if I'd have had that. So, but what a player. Unbelievable. Loved him as a player. But just, I think once he'd signed his contract after that first 6 months, I just think he'd down tools. But that's the honesty that you need sometimes.
Yeah. I just love the thought that you're screaming out into track back and he's shouting back in French that he won the World Cup.
No, he did. But I was like, but you're fucking here now. You know what I mean? So get on with what you're
doing. You're in the middle of
small life. You're World Cup, you. But there you go. That's all fun and games, isn't it? He can't get over. Just, it's going to be hard.
It's not really arguing to that, is it?
We'll kick off.
Yeah, he's still going to try to run, you lazy guess.
He did win the World Cup. What do you want to do about that? I'll come running up in the car in the Wimbledon Cup. Are you all right? But it's like, yeah. There's no comeback to that. He's won the World Cup.
Yeah.
But then on the other angle, I said I didn't get on with him. I went to Euro Disney with the kids. All right, took the kid. Looked after me. Unbelievable. He knew the owner or the manager of Euro Disney. Mate, I had the best 4 days in Euro Disney ever. Front of the queues. My kids were like, is this normal, Dad? Do we normally do this? It was class, mate. Looked up. Didn't have to pay for anything. Had like an upgraded suite overlooking the whole of the park. It was unreal. So say we didn't get on. He looked after me massively.
That's what you talk about on the pitch again, though, isn't it? Yeah, what happens on the pitch is on the pitch, isn't it?
That's professional. He's a professional, but personal. Be personable all the time, you know what I mean? So yeah, treat people the way you want to be treated. But on the pitch, there's things that sometimes you've got to be said. And
And moods are heightened, aren't they?
Yeah.
You're not you now sitting here when you go on the pitch, like you say, you're ready for war.
Come on,
everyone needs to be on my level. And if some people aren't, they're gonna get the sharp end.
I always remember Mark Kennedy, obviously we signed him at Cardiff, obviously Sparky was here, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He I always remember Mark Kennedy coming in and we signed for it. Signed at Cardiff, he said, Percy, I always remember playing against you and thinking you was all right. See you next Tuesday. All right. But knowing you now, he said, you're so different to what you are. But that was that. You know what I mean? You had to go and play to win, and that was your personality there. Off the pitch, you just be as nice as you want.
Never be,
you know what I mean?
Just, yeah.
Treat people the way you want to be treated. Say hello to people. And one of my things that I say to my young players now is when they get off the coach, if there's a young kid there that wants their autograph, you sign the autograph. Because that kid will remember that for the rest of their life. You know what I mean? Even if you think you're nobody, I hate it when they walk off the pitch with their headphones on and stuff like that and just ignore people. All right? For that 2 minutes, take your headphones off. All right? Be personable. If somebody shouts your name, say hello. If they're a 50-year-old bloke and he wants an autograph, he don't want to sign. But if it's a young kid, just look after them. Because, like I said, them kids will remember that forever. And you have to have that relationship to a certain degree, you know. And I think that's probably the one thing that's changed a little bit from the game 20, 30 years ago to the game now is the players are not as approachable. And that's not the players' fault. I think the clubs insulate them too much. Yeah. They need to have that where they can be a bit more personal with him.
Yeah. Because 20 years later, someone that might be on this or having an interview and saying, it was so-and-so that inspired me to do this.
Yeah,
again, we talk about sliding doors, but... Yeah. It's a hero story, isn't it?
Of course it is. Of course it is.
He'd ignored me and all players are arses.
Yeah. Mm. You see it all the time on social media, don't you? The videos of the players with their headphones on walking and the kids are trying to get
that's hot. So for me, for that moment there, that's probably your only interaction with the fans a little bit. Just is it going to matter to you as a player to take your headphones off for 2 minutes, sign a few autographs, say hello to a few people, and they go away happy? It hasn't cost you anything. It's cost you 2 minutes of your time and do that. And yeah, things like that. They don't sit right with me. And I'm hoping as I go on with my career, and I'm hoping that I can sort of integrate that into the players a little bit, so they take it on board. But
yeah,
maybe. Whether or not that'll happen or not, I don't know.
Best player you've ever played against? Nightmare.
I'd say on the day that I played against them, Zola at Chelsea. But then I've been lucky enough, mate. Especially Van Nistelrooy, Omri, Drogba. There's some unreal players. I remember playing against Gudjonsson and Zola at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. And it was the first time, usually everybody used to be 4-4-2, didn't it? He was the first player to play in that pocket. And
pulling you all over.
We couldn't get near him, mate. And it was like, he was unreal. We're 3-0 down after, I think it was at West Brom at the time, 3-0 down after 20 minutes. Couldn't get anywhere near him. And so on the day that I played against him, Zola, but this Omri would be up there, Van Nistelrooy, all class players.
Who's the biggest shithouse? The Mark, because we talked about this with Paul Robinson the other day. I'm just saying, seeing Shearer day now, seeing him. Cause didn't Shearer give you a little bit that day now, the one game?
Shearer a little bit. And then
not clever shithouse, really. Give you the knock-ass of the ball and then go.
I remember Shearer did me at Newcastle away. Did me. And then I've gone to do him back and I end up fucking elbowing Ricky Schumacher rather than him and give Ricky Schumacher 3 stitches and still getting sent off. So
every good story ends with a red card.
He did me a little bit away.
He's gone twice in 2 weeks. I don't ever mention Schumacher. He assisted Robinson for his goal against Villa as well.
Good player, Ricky. One of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet in football as well.
Walking around the black eye after.
How's that stitch, Rick? When he signed the car, we were like best mates, travelled in together for a few years. We were really close. But good top player, top lad as well. So yeah, but I never see that with Shearer. Hartson was probably tough little fucker. He did me down here on the halfway line when he was off the ball. Nose was like that, fucking looking over me while I was on the floor. All right, John? You know what I mean? But that's part and parcel. It was the game back in the day.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's gone now as well, isn't it? There's no...
They can't do it because there's too many cameras everywhere.
Yeah, but then... it's not on the things, but quick opinion on the performative nature of a Gabriel at Arsenal, who is the victim. I've never seen a centre-half be the victim so much. And it works because he gets the decisions.
It's played, make the best of what you can. People call it cheating at times and stuff like that, but make the best of what you can. When people talk about people going down in the box and all that sort of stuff, you're trying to win a football match. You know what I mean? So by hook or by crook, you've got to do it.
If you feel that in your back, forwards behind you, you're going down. You feel that little movement.
I hate it. I hate diving. I hate people play acting, stuff like that. But if you feel something, if there's contact and you go down, then the referee's got a decision to make. If there's no contact, you go down, proper shithousery. Fuck off. Do you know what I mean? But if there's contact and you go down, you are trying to win a football match. So if the keeper comes out and slides and touches and you go down, what are you supposed to do? If the keeper comes out and he doesn't touch you and you go down, then fuck off.
Get in the bin.
And that's how I see it. You, everyone's trying to win a football match. You have to win by hook or by crook.
Yeah. Best manager?
Dennis Smith. Oxford, Smith, so he was, did another one, not a coach. Malcolm Crosby did all the coaching, but I look at what he did with that group of players. But are there better managers, better careers? Definitely. I've worked under Bruce. He was really good at what he did. Man management and looking after players was class. But I just think Dennis for what he did at Oxford at that moment in time was really good. Good fellow as well.
Favourite Blues centre-half you'd have loved to have played alongside, past or present? So obviously it's you and Kenny.
I love playing with Jono.
Jono, yeah.
Out of me 200-odd games, I probably played 150 of them alongside Jono. And I think we complemented each other really well. He was quick, weren't the biggest, but could read the game quite well. I was a little bit more aggressive, wanted to go and win the ball. When I fucked up, he'd cover around for me. When he fucked up, I'd get sent off.
Smash into support.
What do you remember of the game with Fulham when Jeff come down there, all arms and elbows and
got sent off? Yeah. Didn't he down here?
He got sent off. Yeah.
Jono.
But was that the game Stan Collymore played as well?
Yeah.
Because I remember, obviously, I think he mentions it in his autobiography. As we're walking off half time, I was spraying him with a bit. What do you say about trying to win the game? Well, that was him trying to make him go off his game, trying to make him want to bloody punch you in the face. You know, that's what you did back in the day, trying to, you tread on people's feet, you know, all that sort of stuff. It was part of the game, and you learn it from an early age.
Sav down here with Dion.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Right. Wind him up, headbutt, get sent off, down to 10 men, job done, go and win the game. So that they're the dark arts that you need to learn. There's fine lines between it. You could call it cheating. You could call it real. There's fine lines between it, but you just wanted to get trying to get the best possible result for the club that you're playing for. And every time I cross the white line with blue, it's all I ever wanted to do. I mean, go and win 3 points, go and be the best person or the best player you could be. And it's not wear your heart on your sleeve and play for the badge.
The common thing that's been said from the players is that majority of the time, the game was won in that tunnel because you were...
Back in the day, like the first Villa game here,
there
was no team talks or anything. We were quite calm, but aggressive. You know, when we was in the tunnel, we with the Melberg and what he said about don't know who the players are and everything. It's easy. We'll go and fucking show you what we're all about. But we had that mentality where we'd do that. You know, I mean, nobody would step over the line. We was there. And that first game, maybe was nowhere near us. Nobody called a throw-in goal or whatever you want to call it. But even if without that, we'd have won the game because we were better than them. We wanted it more than them. And I think that's the biggest thing you could say is we wanted it more than most teams when we played against them back in the day. And it's still a part of the game. I think you need to want it.
Yeah. That was a beautiful area. You see where Villa are now, and we're absolutely nowhere near them now, are we?
Yes.
That was at that time. That's the only time in our era that we've been beyond them
competing.
For me, I look back on that. We talk about the Plymouth time. I think I played in 6 Villa Blues derbies and never lost one. For me, I look back at that as a stand. I think, fair play. I'm happy with that. You know what I mean? To lose local, to win local derbies or not get beaten in local derbies was class. I admit that when we was 2-0 down away from home and Stern scores the equaliser, that felt like a win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What a moment. You know what I mean?
That stands out for me.
It felt like a win. And for me, at that moment in time, to not get beaten in games. And I look back at the time and with Brucey and stuff like that, I think he probably, over the 4 years in the Premier or 3 years in the Premier League that time, I think I'd have played in every single Premier League, every single derby. I think he'd probably maybe see something in me for the derby games rather than not. You know what I mean? I need him there. I need him in that game.
1,000,000%. As a fan, we'd be like,
and that's what I said. So for me to play in them games and be picked in them games, I think he probably thought that. I remember going to Crystal Palace and I weren't in the squad. And I remember Brucey saying to me, he said, "Percy, I'm not putting you in the squad." He said, "But I want you to travel." I was like, "Come on, Gav, I don't need to travel." He went, "No, I need you," because he just left Crystal Palace. He said, "I need you to beside me in the duck," which was class, you know what I mean? But I think it stood about a lot for what I was about as a player, if you know what I mean. So even though he'd left me out of the squad, I felt he had a little bit of respect for me at that moment in time. And he just stood beside me in case it kicks off.
So you're all,
like, I'll look after you, Catherine.
I'll sort you out.
I was surprised you'd seen when he would actually go and take the Villa job. And obviously McLeish was the big one. But even Brucey going over, there's a bit of a gap.
Not overly. I mean, if I was ever lucky enough to get offered the Villa job, would I take it? Probably.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm a Millwall fan. Would I take the West Ham job if it got offered me? Probably. But that's what the personal and that's the professional. You know, I look back at, is it the right? McLeish didn't work out, did he, at all? You know what I mean? So sometimes do you need that in your life? Do you need that sort of, or do you want to stay a bit of a legend at one club and not worry? Is there another job for you? You don't know what financially where people can do it. I might have to take that job because if not, I'm going to lose my house. I ain't got a job at the moment. So you don't know what's going on.
Imagine
in
if
life.
They're offering you 3-4 times what you're on. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
But that's what I'm saying. So why would you not?
He's not Blue. Bruce isn't a Blues fan, I imagine. I don't know. For sure. He's up north, isn't he? So him, it's a...
You got Craig and Gary Gardner as well, though.
Yeah.
You know, they've done it.
And even to this day, the video of Gary scoring... And running the length of the pitch, and I've never seen anyone happier in the life to score a goal and that's against your boyhood club.
But I did it with the Millwall playoff game. You know what I mean? Millwall's my boyhood club, you know what I mean? But you play for the team. So when we beat Millwall away 1-0 in the playoffs, that was my final because I was suspended for the playoff final. So them two games were my playoff final, if you know what I mean. So to win that game, was I ecstatic? Yeah, of course I was. But then I've then got to speak to my dad, who's a Millwall fan, followed them home and away for 30 years. And that's it. But it's the personal and the professional. You have to deal with it. And but I always remember a little story when I played against Millwall. There was I remember standing on the halfway line and getting some proper shit from a Millwall fan, right? And I remember it clear as day. As walked out, one of my dad's best mates, who he went home and away to, like, there's a little lull in the game. He's come down to the bloke who stood up, tapped him on the shoulder, went, "You leave him a fucking loan, he's Millwall." I had to the bloke, and the bloke goes, "What the fuck are you on about?" Like, because obviously my dad's mate knows I'm a Millwall fan, all that, told it to shut the fuck up and leave me alone on the pitch.
Wow.
It's mad, isn't it? Like, little things like that just stand out, you know, in games.
That Millwall game away, did you look up and see your old man?
Yeah. Do you know what, though? I think he was happy. You know what I mean? He always wanted me to do well. He wanted me to play at the highest level he could. So to see his boy with an opportunity to get promoted to the Premier League, I don't think you'd have...
It's kind of been some mad mixed emotion. Yeah. As I was saying, you've got it as a player, but even...
Yeah, a little bit. But I think you'd have been all right with it.
Yeah.
Like I said, he always wanted me to do well. He followed me everywhere, and I used to love it. Little things like, you remember, he'd ring me on the Monday and he'd go, "Boy, I don't know if I can get down." Like, we were playing Newcastle away on a Tuesday night. Lived in London. He went, "I don't know if I can get up to you on Tuesday night." I said, don't worry about it. It's fine. You know what I mean? Can't go every game. And midday on a Tuesday, I'll get a phone call. Leave me a ticket. I'm on my way up. But honestly, I think he'd probably miss 10 games. Even when I played for Plymouth, he'd get the train up and back. And he watched pretty much every professional game that I played. So from that point of view, he'd probably lived out his boyhood dream for his boy, which for me was, it was class.
Brilliant.
That's class. So looking back on 25 years plus, what achievement are you most proud of? Not particularly Blues, but just what stands out as your biggest achievement?
I think you look back, all the get promoted, Paul Vowers, my last year as a professional footballer was really good. No Plymouth staying. Like all the big achievements. I think probably the one thing I'd say is I probably made the best of my ability. You know, I probably played to the where I could. Could I have got any more out of myself? I don't know. If I was more, the most professional of footballers? I look at the boys nowadays, they're probably in the gym every day. And I wasn't a real gym person. I think my mentality got me through most of what I did. So maybe if I'd have a bit more professional, could I have grabbed a little bit more out of the game, stayed at the top a little bit longer? I don't know.
Yeah, so but you wouldn't have got all the games of snookering then, though, would you?
No, probably not. I would have enjoyed
myself. But your snooker game improved.
Mate, I'm half decent. I'm back playing as well. I'm half decent at the minute. I'm flying, but...
So you're on the circuit next year?
Yeah, something like a little seniors tour. I've thought about it. but I don't know. So that would probably be the one thing I'd say. But I think I got every ounce of where of me as an ability, as a person. I got every ounce out of what I could do. And, yeah, that's sort of something to be proud of.
Then finally, just a message to Blues fans, really, and
just keep backing the club, mate. You've always had the club at your heart. There's not too many better sets of fans, you know what I mean? And from my history and being here and watching the club, I think you're class. Just keep backing the club, and hopefully it goes to bigger and better things. You know, I think the club's in good hands at the minute with the owners that it's got some real big aspirations. But I think ultimately you have that, but don't lose the nucleus of what the club is. It's a working man's football club that needs that at the heart of it, you know, with everything else that's going on. And but they're the top set of fans, and love playing for them for the 8 years I was here.
Brilliant.
Thanks for your time, man. It's been close, Darryl.
It's been emotional.
Cheers, mate.